together. I'd like to thank Professor Hutt for his introduction. His own book on the economics of the color bar was an inspiration to me when I was working on South Africa. Our secretary, Don Lipset, also serves as secretary and prime mover of the individual of the Invisible Hand Society. This society honors the free market, and in particular Adam Smith, as you might imagine. It will sponsor a pilgrimage to Adam Smith's grave in Edinburgh in 1976. When Don asked me to talk about the regulatory agencies, I should say that I've worked in the government for 5 years, I'm sorry, I therefore thought of entitling my remarks with Two Visible Hand of the Regulatory Agencies. A better title, however, would be How the Regulatory Agencies Are Robbing Business and Consumers and What Can Be Done About It. By regulatory agencies, I mean governmental organizations whose main activity is circumscribing or interfering with the free market. At the federal level, the Interstate Commerce Commission, for example, regulates truckers and railroads as well as inland water carriers and pipeline operators. The Civil Aeronautics Board regulates airline carriers. The Federal Maritime Commission regulates ocean carriers. Any discussion of regulatory agencies, or for that matter any other subject, must start with what Milton Friedman said on the subject. Professor Friedman argued in Capitalism and Friedman, I noticed he just came in, I'm glad he didn't miss that. Professor Friedman argued in Capitalism and Freedom in 1962 that there are three legitimate reasons for establishing and maintaining regulatory agencies. These reasons are, first, defining the rules of the game. This is a free translation of what he said. Defining the rules of the game for the conduct of business. Number two, breaking up monopolies so that free entry and competition are able to continue. And three, compensating for neighborhood effects, such as pollution, which is the current rage, by charging groups that are responsible and distributing the revenue to those who are hurt, although in the case of pollution, that would be a big job. Probably closest to the first role of defining the rules of the game is the Securities and Exchange Commission. This agency requires and polices disclosure of securities offerings and in general tries to prevent misrepresentation in prospectuses or other securities packages, as Don Lipset well knows. My feeling is that by requiring more information, the public has been put in a better position to buy securities. This, in turn, has widened the market for securities to the point where this is probably the best market in the world. So on balance, I think there may be some case, small though maybe, for this agency. The second role, that of breaking up monopolies, is entrusted primarily to the Justice Department and to the Federal Trade Commission. As in the case of the SEC, the Justice Department's role has been fairly well defined, although its actual enforcement has been weak and inconsistent at times. The Federal Trade Commission, however, has been sidetracked from its anti-monopoly mandate. As was shown in the first report of Nader's Raiders, it has spent much of its time protecting larger businesses from competition from new entrants, as, for example, in the textile industry. Finally, to the third role, which we may call the Robin Hood role of a government regulatory agency. This function is to compensate those who are hurt by neighborhood effects through a tax on those who cause these effects. Relatively little has been done in this area in the important subjects, important topics. Many spurious government programs have been sponsored under this heading, while genuine neighborhood effects like pollution have generally been ignored. What it is important to urge on President Nixon at this stage, as he attempts to cope with the subject of this subject of public concern, is that taxation is a better method of handling the problem than more expenditures. The old lobbies for more federal spending will be arguing that what we need is more research on pollution or government subsidy of devices to counteract pollution. If, however, businesses are forced to pay a tax for pollution, as they have done, for example, in the Ruhr Valley in Western Germany, about which other people may know more than I, they will find a way to reduce this pollution. I have mentioned the first report of Nader's raiders on the Federal Trade Commission. Other reports have been coming out by Nader's raiders on the basis of their second summer of research, and I would like to say something about this. I'm sure most of you consider Ralph Nader an arch foe of business and probably the free market. Also, many of you probably agree with Professor Burns, who said yesterday evening that he thought that the youth of America was, if I may summarize, irresponsible. His criticism, and I listened carefully, was directed at youth in general. He did not differentiate between different groups of young people. I think that our young people, and I suppose I must be considered young since I'm under 30, are generally interested in doing the right thing. The problem is they don't know who to follow or who to believe. Now, Ralph Nader is someone in whom they believe because he is dedicated to service of the public. To an extent, he should be a hero of this group because he is fighting monopolies. I'm talking of those of us here who believe that monopolies are not a good thing, and government interference with the market. For example, he has been critical of a few very large businesses, as we all know. He has also, in a study conducted under his direction, come out 100% behind the free market model in a report released recently on the Interstate Commerce Commission. How much time do I have?
2 minutes.
I don't suppose that Don Lipset is going to stop driving his Corvair out of gratitude for the Interstate Commerce Commission study, but it does illustrate how truth manages to transcend partisan or ideological lines. I don't think it was an accident that Milton Friedman's and Ralph Nader's, well, it probably was, but I don't think it was anything necessarily ironic about the fact that they were 1 week apart on the cover of Time magazine. I think that both Milton Friedman and Ralph Nader are arguing in the public arena, trying to influence public opinion. Neither have a business or public office to use as a source of authority. This is an example of John Stuart Mill's model of a marketplace of ideas. Now, I think that Nader is doing very well in this marketplace. And some of the things that he is doing should win the enthusiastic support of people at this meeting. For example, I mentioned the Interstate Commerce Commission study. This study called for the abolition of the Interstate Commerce Commission. As most of you know, rates have been set by the Interstate Commerce Commission on the basis of pleading by interested parties. However, consumers have rarely been represented at these meetings, so the prices have been determined by the coziness of the relationship between a lawyer and members of the commission. This system produces the worst kind of distortions in the transportation market. These distortions have been pinpointed in the past by libertarians such as Friedman, Hilton, and Stone, but they were fully documented, I think, for the first time in the Nader report, the Nader ICC report. I must confess that I was the economic consultant for this report, so that this society was not totally unrepresented in this area. In other studies, of course, some of you may have a good case that what Ralph Nader has been doing as raiders may be challenged. The validity of some of the conclusions they have come to is less obvious than in the case of the ICC report. In these situations, the problem often is that the law students involved have had little exposure to the principles of the free market. I hope that those who have objections to some of the conclusions of Nader's raiders as their reports to continue to come out, and there will be a lot more of them. The Food and Drug Administration just came out after the ICC report. They have space for public relations purposes. I hope that if anyone has objections, that they will make these objections known, because, as I mentioned before, I think the law students involved, and I know a considerable number of them, are generally interested in the truth. And a lot of them started out as socialistically inclined and have been won over to the view that the government is doing more harm than good in certain areas, such as the ICC. I favor the general approach being taken in the Nader Raider type studies. What they do is investigate a problem in depth and make known their views to the public. They've been concentrating quite a lot on the regulatory agencies, so this is quite in line with my topic. Their program is supervised by an experienced observer of the governmental and business system. Their energies are harnessed and they are exposed to professional standards of research. Most important, they have leadership. I would think that there is scope for investigations of this kind by people in this audience, in this society, who are interested in creating a more perfect and freer market. It is an excellent time for this kind of activity. A few years ago, someone talking about the inefficiencies of the regulatory agencies could be sure of an audience only at the Mall Paralyzed Society. He could be sure of publication only in the Journal of Political Economy and the New Individualist Review. Today, this has changed drastically, and I think that this represents an opportunity for those who are dissatisfied with features of the present system. We cannot expect politicians and businessmen to be very far out ahead of the public. The fact that the public has been convinced that something is wrong with our system makes it a good time for those who are anxious to convince them that what is wrong with the system is interference, excessive interference with the market, and that what is needed is a larger market, a more open market.
How much time do I have now?
I should say again, I expected to be on second, so I wasn't, my marks weren't fully pulled together. If the politician is too far ahead of the public, he runs the danger of being voted out. The businessman runs the danger of losing money for his firm, and in a competitive environment would, of course, lose his job. I would like to briefly touch on a few other agencies, since I talked about regulatory agencies, and I don't wish to cover only the ICC. In the case of the Civil Aeronautics Board, many of its functions, as we know, will be made less necessary, and the problems of airport congestion and air traffic control bottlenecks eased if airline tickets could be resold and the market allowed to determine their price. This has been put forward by a number of people, but I think a concerted effort by a number of students would make put this point of view over a lot more effectively to the public. Landing rights could also be auctioned off. To take another example, the FCC interferes with the market for radio and other communications. Its interference with the market could be greatly reduced by auctioning off frequencies on the radio dial and allowing the market to determine resale of this property. In the banking area, in which I have had a lot to do since I worked with both the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, we have seen a steady increase in the number of agencies regulating banking. Now, David Meiselman thinks that this is not necessarily a bad thing because you have competition between regulatory agencies. But along with this increase in the number of regulatory agencies, you've also had an increase in the number of restrictions on banking and also in the number of people looking examining them. Their staffs have grown to the point now where they're probably, well, I wouldn't dare to estimate how many other regulators there are, but there are about 6,000 examiners and staff running around the country examining banks. I would like to throw out a novel suggestion, relatively novel in this country, that is to eliminate all bank examinations. That is a specific new element in this discussion. And instead to require bank and savings and loan associations to have an annual audit. Some do have an annual audit anyway. But I think if you eliminated the bank examination and required an audit, you would release about 5,000 people who are wasting their lives traveling around the country examining banks. This is a humanitarian thing for them, quite apart from the fact that it will ease the burdens of banks, who some of the good ones of which are both audited and examined every year. These people, of course, would probably go to work in the auditing firm, so they wouldn't be out of a job. But with bank examinations eliminated, many of the bank regulatory agencies would shrink drastically. As an example, in Canada, the equivalent of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which has 2,000 employees, has only 3 employees. It was a ratio of 1 to 600 and something. Even though they examine quite a number of banks, they examine 12 large banks plus 65 or so savings and loan associations. All the bank examinations, meanwhile, are performed by one person in Canada, the Inspector General of Banks, because they already have annual audits. I also would, of course, recommend that the bank regulatory agencies give up their controls on interest rates, and I also have argued that they, in an article I read, that they be consulted, that the Fed be out of this whole business of regulating banks and concentrate on the job of monetary policy, where they've been doing an extraordinarily bad job. The chief concern, I think, in the regulatory area in banking should be to limit the possibility of financial monopoly, as you've had in Japan and Western Germany, where the financial institutions have been very important in the growth of the economies, but have also tended to become very powerful and monopolize control over business. I am going to wrap up my discussion with a passing comment about the Postal Service. There's no reason why the Post Office should regulate competition in addition to, I assume it's under the postal law, that no one else is allowed to compete. There's no reason why they should prohibit competition in addition to performing their own function. And if, in Manhattan particularly, where I live, I know that there would be many entrants in the business, even at 6 cents a letter, and if the postal rates go up, as they proposed, a 66 2/3% increase, I would think that the market, new entrants would be very large. In sum, I urge members of the society to go beyond discussion of ideal systems, such as those proposed yesterday by David Friedman, and consider and make recommendations for practical solutions. Some of the solutions which I propose would involve a great deal of cutback in staffing in regulatory agencies, and I have one final recommendation in this area. Increased reform will hurt some employees who may not be able to find employment elsewhere once the harmful activities of their agencies are eliminated. Many of them have skills which are probably not usable anywhere else on Earth. The answer may be to enlist the aid of employment services, which could also enter the area of job training. Each displaced employee, I recommend, will be given a voucher, good either for one free placement or alternatively for 6 months' worth of free employment placement care. Thank you.